Lawrence Luckinbill, one of the great actors of our time. I'm honored to have you on the radio with me, Lawrence. Effective Memories, How Chance and the Theater Saved My Life. You know what occurs to me right now, sir? That, in fact, I should be calling you sir. If you lived in the U.K.
I'll call you sir, too.
No. If you lived, I'm serious. If you lived in the U.K., you would have been knighted, called Sir Lawrence Luckinbill. So I think that's what I'll do from here on in. So
you
begin the book by saying, why does anyone want to act? And that is my first question I will ask you. Why did you want to act? And if you've got it in you, should you keep doing it?
You got it in you? What's that?
I mean, the urge to act.
Oh, yes. You don't know you have it in the beginning. What you do, what happens is you feel a hole, a gap in your life, and you feel that there's something more out there that you should be doing. Well, I was a kid. I grew up in the Ozarks in Arkansas, and there was virtually no culture that I could connect with, except possibly radio, you know, which was everywhere.
Good.
But I wanted something more, and I didn't know why. I was in a dysfunctional family, and that was part of it. That was the reason why I was a lot of the time locked in between my alcoholic father and my codependent mother. And I had a lot of problems with that. But I knew there was something higher out there, and I didn't know what. And as I gradually grew and realized things, one of the things I was just looking at in the book is when I got my first book, the aunt who disapproved of me and my family the most gave me a book on my first communion. It was a gift, and it was The Adventures of Robin Hood. And I ate that book. I loved that book. And it was so beautiful to me, the idea that there was something that would stimulate your imagination, the paragraphs of words would go somewhere and travel somewhere and take you somewhere. So those things gradually congealed into a belief that that there was something out there that I couldn't grasp. And then to try to make a living, my mother was determined that I would be a doctor. Dr. Luckinbill, we'll see you now. And I flunked all of my pre-med courses twice, spectacularly. And it was not for me. It was not going to happen that way. But the professor who flunked me the most reasonably, with a great sense of humor, said, you don't belong in the sciences. You belong in the performing arts. And I had to deal with that. I didn't know that. And it came to me out of the blue like that after a failure. And when I finally committed to that, it's a long story and it's a funny story, but by the time I was able to commit to that fully, I was 19 years old and I was graduated from University of Arkansas. So that's how it happened.
All right. Now, like lots of memoirs, there are lots of photos in the book, photos of you performing in movies and with your family, including your family growing up. Your father, yeah, it occurs to me, really looks like you. But you were,
yes,
you were determined not to make the same mistakes. But yet, frankly, and you write about them, you're very honest about everything. You made some,
yes,
of those, at least some of the same mistakes. Advice to parents, how do you avoid making mistakes you know your parents made?
I don't think you can. I think that's subconscious. I think it's deep within you. What you're referring to is that my father was an alcoholic and never changed. But also, he was a decent man. And also, he was an abuser of my mother. So all of these things are so confusing that I don't think you understand where they lie in your subconscious, you know? And by the time I was doing well in the theater business, I was also starting to drink a lot. And drinking was something that I hated so much as a child that I said, I will never do this. But now I'm doing it, and I'm trying to drink my father under the table. And I found out I was sort of like Brandon Behan's cork, Richard's cork leg. I could drink and drink and drink and drink, and everybody would be flat, and I wouldn't, because I was determined never to be drunk, you see. But I had to go through that and live through that, and all of the misery it did bring me and my first marriage. And so eventually I was able to escape from that too.
Where the hell is everybody? And check these thermostats. I want the heat lowered. Whose office is this? Damn it, I don't believe I'd trust a man who'd spend a Sunday evening at home rather than at the office. I want copies of every memo on every desk in this wing. I want to know what's going on. I'm not saying I don't trust people. I'm just saying you can't depend on them. No matter how many advisors a president's got, he is alone. Damn, this is the loneliest job in the world.
That is not President Lyndon Baines Johnson, but it sounds like him, and it kind of looks like him if you saw him in action. He is Sir Lawrence Luckinbill, the author of Effective Memories, How Chance and the Theater Saved My Life. So how did it come to be that you played President Johnson, and what did Lady Bird Johnson, who you had contact with, say about your version of her husband?
Very, very good question. I got, when I was 55 years old, I got a call from David Susskind, who was a great producer in New York, and he told me, it was Christmas time, by the way, and he said, I'll need you in Toronto all through Christmas and the New Year because you're going to play Lyndon Johnson for me in a one-man show for PBS. And, of course, I said, what? And no, I'm not doing that. It's Christmas, my kids, blah, blah. And he said, there's a script coming. Read it and call me back. So the script came. It was very, very long, very difficult. And I was scared to death. And so I took it to my wife, who had a desk in the same office. And I dropped it on her desk. And I said, take a read of this, because this is I don't want to do this. And so she read about 10 pages. She came back and dropped it back on my desk and said, I guess if you don't do this, you don't want to be an actor anymore. So I sort of zipped up and called David back, and I tried to talk him out of it. But in the course of trying to talk him out of it, I was sitting with him knee to knee reading the script to him to prove that I was not capable of doing this job. And I heard my father's voice coming through me, his lonesome cowboy, hard-scrabble voice with all the biblical inflections that come from the Deep South. And I started to cry. And David just looked at me, and he smiled. And I said yes. And so it was a total accident, and I actually fought against. But it turned out to be a huge success. And it gave me the idea that I could turn my career from chasing Hollywood movies and worrying too much about the theater into something that I could build and make myself. And so I ended up remaking that Lyndon play, and then doing a play about Clarence Darrow, then one about Teddy Roosevelt, and finally Ernest Hemingway. And each one of these men came into my life as if they had been summoned. I didn't go looking for them. I didn't know how to look. But all of a sudden, all of these men are there. And the one consonant that they had was a belief in America's potential to deal with social justice, to give us equality, to give us liberty. And, you know, that then became my life for 35 years, Steve.
Yeah.
And I traveled all over the world and gave those parts, gave those men credence. And I I realized that by another accident of a mentorship, someone touching my shoulder and saying, go this way, go that way, and my actually listening to them had changed my life.
Well, and I think in the process changed other lives. What did Lady Bird Johnson say? I mean, she was still around and very active. Her late husband, President Johnson, is who you played. What did she say about your version of her husband?
You know, she absolutely loved it. I was so shocked because when I met Lady Bird, it was like this. I was in the LBJ library being given a tour because I was going to play there in their theater with that show. And this small woman came around the corner with an apron on, and her shoes were tucked into her pockets of her apron. She was barefoot. And I thought she was a cleaning woman. And she walked straight up to us, and I realized who I was looking at. And I said, you look just like my mother. And she said, oh, honey, that is the best compliment I have ever received.
Just like that, yeah.
Just like that, and that was my beginning with Lady Bird. She was a queen. She was a wonderful human being and very, very smart and very beautiful. As far as I'm concerned, people criticized her beauty alongside Jackie Kennedy. That was very unfair. But you know what? I learned that Lyndon, even though he philandered a bit, he was actually really in love with his wife. And in all of his life, he depended on her. So at one point, I got curious enough to ask her, how did he feel about the war and the casualties and all of that?
The Vietnam War.
And she's the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "Oh, honey, I wake up in the night, and he's not in the bed. I get up and I go and I look, and in the hallway I open the door a little, and he's out there." In his pajamas, holding the situation report the day before, and he's moaning, and he's crying. He hated that war. And, you know, when we look back at presidents, we try to reevaluate what they've done, how they've done it. It's a complicated thing, but Lyndon was drawn into the Vietnam War by the Kennedys, and by all of that stuff that happened before Jack died. And the Kennedys said, you have to fulfill Jack's agenda. And Lyndon said, yes, I will. And he did. And yet, taking over that horrible war was a terrible mistake, and he knew it.
Hmm.
But he was a micromanager. That was his personality. So he went on and on and on with it.
And you write about that in the book, but what is fascinating to me is that is not that kind of sensitivity, is not how we, I think of President Johnson. So at the very, very beginning of our conversation, Sir Lawrence Luckinbill, I played a clip from Star Trek V, The Final Frontier.
Yes.
You know, it's interesting to me that, I mean, you were acclaimed for your role in that movie, but the Star Trek franchise was actually begun years before on television, and the go-ahead for that came from your mother-in-law.
That's correct. That is absolutely correct. And, of course, I learned that not only from history, but from my wife, Lucy. And I learned something else from Lucy when we were talking about this the other day. She said, you know, Gary Morton, her second husband, who actually told Lucy that this was a good thing to do because he liked those sort of adventure things. And then she, my wife said that she thought that her mother thought that Star Trek was some sort of a lighthearted comedy about stars going out on a Bond tour.
And you're talking about your mother-in-law, of course, Lucille Ball.
You're married
to Lucy Arnaz, and that is the anniversary that I referred to earlier. But you're very candid in the book. And your marriage, I think both second marriage, your second and Lucy's second, wasn't always smooth sailing. And you write about that, and you write about how at one point in time you wanted to get away from it, all the showbiz stuff, and move to, upstate New York?
Yes, to Katona, New York, in Westchester. And we did. We left Hollywood because there was a march set up against or for something, I don't remember. But we had our kids all had to be dressed up a certain amount, certain way. And we had to be dressed up, and it was a Sunday morning, and we were going to make this long march for whatever the thing was. And we actually walked down Rodeo Drive, made a left turn, and came around the corner, and we walked another half a block, and that was the whole march. That was the whole thing. And then we stopped for coffee and lattes. And I thought that was really silly. And also, I didn't like the message my children were getting, which was that they were going to be adjuncts to us and be photographed whether they liked it or not, and also drawn into show business on a very false level, which is a lot of what happens in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And so we quit Hollywood, and we took our whole family to the woods in Westchester, which is 55 minutes from New York City, but it's a great woods up there alongside the Hudson River, and so we lived there for 26 years, and we raised our kids there, and they still are nostalgic for that house. That was their original house, and if you remember your original house,
sure,
where you grew up, as I do extremely well, you will know what I mean. There's a great affection.
Well, you know,
the way they grew up.
Yep. The name of the book, once again, Effective Memories, How Chance and the Theater Saved My Life. Except what I didn't do, and we've run out of time, is talk about how Sidney Poitier and Buddy Hackett combined to save your life. And you know what? I guess people are just going to have to get the book to hear that, learn that. But there are so many incredible stories, wonderful stories in this book. Sir Lawrence Luckinbill, thank you so much for joining us on WGN.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you very much. And I have a great affection for Chicago. My sister lived there for many years and was the mother of the Wachowski boys.
Excellent.
And, yes. So
all
I
right.
Just get throw that in there.
I'm glad you did. Tell your wife I say hi, and happy Sunday afternoon. And again, thank you very much for joining us.